Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hello, welcome to the Inside EBS podcast for February the 18th, 2022. This is episode number 98. On today's show, we'll be talking about doing a Kia EV6 highway winter range test, a Mini Cooper SE winter range test, and Nissan has been teasing two new vehicles that will build in the U.S. I'm Dominic Yoni, Inside EV's forum moderator and Inside EV's editor. Joining us today is the classy yet sassy Tom Malogny, Inside EV's editor and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. We also have the mischievous Mr. Martin Lee from the newly revamped EV News Daily podcast, which is available on all the best podcast platforms. And of course, Kyle Connor joins us from the majestic, practically palatial halls of the Out of Spec Studios. He puts together occasional videos for the Inside EV's YouTube channel. Okay, so before we get going, I'd like to ask that you please subscribe to the channel. If you're watching us on YouTube, please hit that thumbs up button and ring that bell icon for notifications. And if you're watching us on Twitch, you can ring that bell icon for notifications. All right, so with that out of the way, welcome everybody. Happy Friday. So I guess, I was en route most of yesterday, and so we don't have a comment of the week this week. So that's on me. Sorry. But we will do it again next week. But we will talk about what we've been driving, and we've been driving a lot. So I don't know, Tom, do we want to start with you?
Sure.
Okay. So you had a Mini Cooper SE?
Yeah. I have a 2022 Mini Cooper SE, and I've spent some time in this before. I had one back in 2020 I drove it down to Kyle's track in North Carolina. We had some fun with it. We actually did a range test together, the two of us back then, but it was a lower speed. We did a 55 mile an hour range test. And since then we've kind of moved on to doing the 70 mile an hour range test. But, you know, Kyle and I talked a lot about how we were going to standardize tests and what we were going to do when I was down there back then. And kind of since then, we've moved to this 70 mile an hour standardized test where we both do the same things. So we make sure the test, you know, can be compared back and forth. So we did the 70 mile an hour highway range test. The 2022 Mini Cooper SE got a little bit of a range bump. It had been EPA range rating at 110 miles for the last 2 years per charge. For 2022, it's rated at 114, so 4 more miles. Hey, when you got 100 mile range, you'll take every mile you can get, you know. It doesn't have a bigger battery or anything. It's just through powertrain efficiencies that they are able to eke out a couple more miles. So I did the range test actually yesterday. We don't even have the video up on Inside EVs yet. I didn't even write a review. I just did it yesterday. So we'll do a spoiler here.
Fresh news.
I ended up with 103 miles, which is exactly the EPA highway range rating. I didn't hit the combined EPA rating, but I hit the EPA range, highway EPA range rating right on the nose. Now we do call this a winter test, but crazy thing is yesterday in New Jersey, it was like the oddest thing. We had been in the 10s and 20s Fahrenheit all week. And then yesterday it went up to 68 degrees. And today it's dropping back down. Tomorrow it's going to be like in the 20s. So like the one day I did the range test, we got spring weather. So it's kind of, we are calling it the winter range test because I did it in the winter in February in New Jersey, but right. The temperatures were in the 60s. So it kind of cheated.
I didn't have that key piece of information when I
I probably wouldn't have gone quite as far. If I just did the range test 2 days earlier, it probably would have been in the 90s somewhere. But, Mini Cooper SE is such a fun car to drive. I love that car. I swear, every time I get one, I think about, well, maybe I should buy one. I'm thinking about now spending 4 days with it. I'm like, yeah, I could do this. And, you know, they only cost, if you get the base trim, it's $29,900. And I would qualify for the full $7,500 federal tax credit. And in New Jersey, I'd get $5,000 cash on the hood on that card. You don't have to apply for it later. Cash on the hood and no sales tax. It's sales tax exempt. So it's $18,000. Brand new Mini Cooper SE I could own. So, you know, every time I get one of these, I think about it. I probably won't, but like, I'm really loving driving this car. It's such a fun little car to drive.
I need you to buy one then sell it to me.
Yeah. I bet you I could buy it and then sell it in a couple of months for more than $18,000. I mean, I wouldn't do that. But
Tom, the cheapest one is like $28,000 on cars.com. You can make 10 grand buying this thing.
I think that I don't know 100%, but I think the federal tax credit as well as the New Jersey rebate, there is, you know, language in there that you can't do that. You can't flip it. I mean, they would never know and you wouldn't get caught, but you're not supposed to do that if you're getting the tax credit, you know.
Huh. So, don't listen to me.
Yeah.
I say you buy 50 of them.
Yeah. Now, if I buy one, I'll keep it. I'll keep this as just like a cool driving around vehicle. But like, you know, one of the things that is interesting, and Kyle has the same problem. We get to drive all these really cool cars and I always want one. I just had the Ioniq 5 and I want it. And it's like, okay, now I have the Mini Cooper. I want one of those. There's just so many vehicles I can have. I already have reservations on a F-150 Lightning and a Rivian R1T. That's $160,000
with
the vehicles that I have. Yeah, and Cybertruck, but I don't even think about that. Like I told you, I'm going to give that to my grandkids, and I don't have any children yet. I already have $160,000 worth of vehicles reserved, which is way more than I can spend on vehicles. So, you know, as much as I'd like to, there's got to be a limit on how many cars I get. But this would be really inexpensive and so much fun to drive. So I'm still thinking about it.
EV Nomads, Brandon and Kaylee say Mini Cooper SE is just 300 pounds more than the battery of the Hummer EV. That was another big story this week. Someone found some EPA documents with the weight of just like the battery of the Hummer EV. And it's like, I don't know, 3,000 pounds or something. Because it's over 200 kilowatt hours. It's huge, right?
Yeah, it's enormous. Another thing that was funny, if you guys remember, it wasn't too long ago, I did the Lucid Air 70 mile an hour highway range test, which took like, I was in the car for 8 hours combined, you know, with one little half an hour break. And this range test, it was so funny. As I'm driving, you know, I do check-ins at 25%, at 50%, at, you know, 75%, all those. They were happening like in 15 minutes. And like with the Lucid Air, they were hours. It was like 2 hours of driving in between each check-in. And with the Cooper SE, like I didn't even have enough time to like make some notes and take pictures of the efficiency and everything. It's so funny. And when I ran out, when the battery was completely drained, if I was driving the Lucid Air, I would still have more driving range than any other production vehicle sold today. After I depleted the battery on the Cooper SE. So it's fun. It's totally different. You could buy 5 Cooper SEs for a Lucid Air, so we can't compare them, but
stage them 100 miles apart. Then you have the same range.
Yeah. What I was thinking about doing actually, if the Lucid Air is going to have vehicle to vehicle charging, that cable's not ready yet. What I was actually thinking about doing, and I actually talked to Lucid about this, Kyle, how about if we get a Mini Cooper SE and a Lucid Air and you and me do a long road trip and one of us is in the Cooper SE, one of us is in the Lucid. And when the Cooper SE just runs out on the side of the road, we pull up, we plug the cars in, we charge it up, we go get something to eat, and then we come back to the two cars, unplug, and then keep driving. And
so we only use one car gets to charge at Electrify America with the free charging, and then that will charge the Mini Cooper SE.
Anyway, I just thought that would be that'd be a fun thing to do.
So what was the ultimate number again on that Mini Cooper SE?
103 miles, and I ended up with 3.5 miles per kilowatt hour efficiency. Now, I did a Mini Cooper SE 70 mile an hour range test two years ago, and I got 5 more miles. And the temperatures were very similar. The only thing I could think of, well, every car is different. 5 miles really isn't a lot on any particular range test. But I had the 17-inch, they call them tentacle wheels, on the Cooper SE now. And last time I had the 17, same rubber, 17-inch wheels, but but I had the Corona wheel.
Corona wheel.
Which and there's a whole story to that, which are optimized for aerodynamics. They're flat. So that could add a couple of miles. You know, they're much more aerodynamic. So the fun thing about that was when I got the Mini Cooper in 2020, it was like in March of 2020. And it was right when Corona started. And they gave me the car and I was driving down to see Kyle and the roads were empty because it was right in the beginning of the coronavirus. Everyone was off the roads. It was such a pleasure to just drive from New Jersey down to, those are the Corona spokes.
Great road tripping car because it has a great charging curve.
Yeah, it does. As I'm driving down to see Kyle, I tweeted out a picture of the wheels and was like, so unfortunate. These things are actually called the Corona wheels. You know, it was like hashtag marketing fail. And as I'm driving to see Kyle, Mini called me up on my phone. They're like, Tom, we saw your tweet. We've been having some discussion here. We're going to rename the wheels. You know first. They're now called the Power Spoke wheels, not the Corona Spoke wheels. So we got the first. They changed the name because of my tweet. And so now they're actually called the Power Spoke wheels. And Martin, as you probably know, they're designed to look like a power socket. And maybe in the UK, that's really not what they look like here, but more like a European power socket. Now they're called the Power Spoke. But they were called the Corona wheels, which is hilarious.
So there's one little numbers that came up when you're talking about this. I thought were pretty funny comparing it with the Lucid. So the Lucid has like maybe five times the range of the Mini, but you could probably buy five Minis for the price of the Lucid Air.
Yep. So, and just drive them one at a time. And the Lucid Air, with how fast the Lucid Air charges, it adds like, because the Cooper SE has a 32.6 kilowatt hour battery pack, 28.9 usable. But when you charge it, it actually needs like 31-ish because there's like, you know, a couple of kilowatt hour charging losses, but the Air adds back 31 kilowatt hours in 5.5 minutes. So like it refills the size of the Mini Cooper SE's battery pack in 5.5 minutes.
That's great. That's gas station times.
Yeah.
Right on. Okay. So anything else about the Mini Cooper we should know?
I just love it. It's such a cool, fun car to drive. And not everybody needs a 300-mile EV. A lot of people would be just fine with a 100-mile car. I had one for multiple 100-mile electric vehicles for the first 6 or 7 years that I drove electric vehicles. And I was just fine, made it work. And infrastructure wasn't nearly as good back then as it is now. So, you know, think about it. If you're thinking about getting an electric car and you can't stretch your budget, many people can make a 100-mile EV work just fine, especially if you don't live in the northern states where it gets really cold in the winter. Yeah. That makes it a little bit more challenging. But if you live in the southern states where you have moderate temperatures, so many people can survive with a 100-mile EV just fine.
You know, one of my colleagues drives a Mini Cooper SE and he loves it, drives it everywhere. But I think it's great when you have a second vehicle. They have a Taycan to take long road trips in. Nice. But the Mini is the daily driver. So I think that's a great two-car solution.
Right.
Oh, and so Scott has this question. Actually, I forget, Kyle. I don't think they put it in the SE. I mean, BMW has it for the i3.
So Scott is asking, does the SE have a heat pump?
Yeah. I can't remember now.
It does have a heat pump because it was only the range extenders, at least in the i3s, that had the resistive heating. The battery electric does. Yeah, and people are commenting it does have
a heat pump. It does, yeah. I honestly forget. I know I knew all about this when it first came out, but, dude, guys, I forget everything. I have to refresh my memory all the time.
If you want like a lot of Mini Cooper SE information, you can go to the Inside EVs forum because that's we have like one of the biggest Mini Cooper SE owner communities in all the land over there, and they're very enthusiastic and helpful. It's a great group of people over there.
Yeah, and Brandon also pointed out the SE is so efficient at low speeds. We routinely see 5 miles per kilowatt hour. That's definitely the case. You know, it's not a highway warrior. You know, I mean, it's just like a block driving down the and you get a lot of wind noise at even 70 miles an hour, whereas the car is really quiet tooling around the town and everything. It's quieter than the funny thing is I drove around a friend yesterday because he wanted to check it out. And he's been in my Model 3 many times. And as we're driving around town, he commented, he goes, wow, he goes, this thing's a lot quieter than your Tesla. And it is at lower speeds. But at highway speeds, you get you could just feel that you're pushing that air out of the way.
Right. The Mini Cooper SE is a premium car, basically. It shows at lower speeds. Someone had asked earlier, do you think like for a short range electric vehicle, is the Mini Cooper like the best choice, or would you maybe a Leaf? I don't know how they're pretty close in price, though, right?
Yeah, they're close in price. And you know, I think the Leaf has more utility because it's bigger. Like the back seats, for instance, there's more no range. Back seats. I mean, there are seats back there, but you know, I'm only 5'8". And where I put my seat where it's comfortable, there's like 3 inches of leg room. So, you know, you'd have to be, you know, tiny to sit up front to have somebody in the back seat. So the Leaf offers a lot more utility, but it doesn't have the fun factor or the coolness factor that the Cooper SE does. The Cooper SE is a cool little car that's really a lot of fun to drive. So it's apples to oranges.
Right. Hey, Martin, I understand you got to finally drive a Tesla this week.
Oh boy, here we go.
This is going to hurt your brain. So I've got some clips that I'll show you. And it's sweet. So yeah, this is a Model 3. Well, the Model Y was interesting because the Model Y was simply lowered with some KW coilovers, 40 mil lowering on that, which really does make the Model Y a very capable car at speed, and you know, great change of direction, great performance, of course. But actually, what all the work had been done on from Custom Tesla, who drove over from Germany, they have sort of gone all out really on one of their Model 3s to show you what is possible. You've got the BMW style wing mirrors. You've got this StarTech kit on the front, which is a whole new front end.
That's crazy.
All the existing sensors get put into the StarTech kit. So that all still works on the screen. And so all your parking sensors, etc., all still work absolutely perfectly. And yeah, like the styling changes, I think, are done quite sympathetically, and they work pretty well. Color matching is really good on the new front. And the rear end, I'll show you that in a moment. Inside, they've got this really sweet swivel on the center screen. It just makes so much difference. It lowers it. It's slightly lower in the car, so it helps your eye line over that screen. It really does. The Model 3 is great visibility anyway, but it really does open it up. They've put self-presenting door handles on the Model 3. And I don't know if you can quite see it there, but running down the middle of the handle, that is an LED light. And it goes all the way around. It goes down, it goes under as well. So it's got self-presenting door handles, but also they're illuminated. So if you have a darker colored Model 3 or a Model Y, as you walk up to it at night, you know where the door handle is and know where to pull. So that's pretty cool. These guys will do so much to your Tesla. It's like I said, they drove these two cars over from Germany for an event on tomorrow, on Saturday. If you're watching the YouTube Twitch version of this, my friend Richard, who runs rsev.co.uk, he sells a ton of Teslas. I think he sold two while I was there yesterday for 2 hours filming. And he's like, oh, I sold two more cars. So like a lot of people in the UK are trading in their threes and S's and X's because they just want to play with a Model Y, even if it's not the ideal car for them. Inside, they've put the little Mustang Mach-E screen in front of the steering wheel, but it's not a steering wheel because it's a yoke. This is the original wheel on the car. This is not, taken from the plaid parts catalog, if there is such a thing. This is the original wheel, original scroll wheels, original airbag, etc. However, it's been taken off, reshaped, and the stitching is nice. It's very comfortable. And it took me about 10 to 15 minutes to get used to it. To where your hand falls. And then when I got to come home and I got in the Model Y, my hand was back on top of the steering wheel. So I hadn't totally reprogrammed my muscle memory and my hand was resting at the top. But when driving this car, I found naturally I rested almost holding it underneath, like holding it from like that or on the sides. But it, I found it a really easy experience after just a few minutes. Now, there obviously is the fact that it's a left-hand drive car in right. over here. So you are, and you're also driving down, you know, very close to the pavement, you know, and you're driving over the kind of the drains and the potholes. So that takes a few minutes to also readjust your brain to make sure that you're driving the correct way. So I don't know how much of it was that was in a left-hand drive car and how much, but I would say within 8 to 10 minutes, it was normal. I went around did some maneuvers in the car park, just sort of forwards and backwards and just moving around obstacles, and it was absolutely fine. I did end up putting my palm on it and sort of spinning and et cetera. The plaid version does have more kind of, I'd say, little kind of knobbles that you can do that with. This doesn't. Behind it is the Mackie style screen. That's a touch screen, which brings in CarPlay, so wireless Apple CarPlay and Android Auto, which is nice. And actually, that is controllable from the scroll wheels as well, so you can move around Apple CarPlay with that, unless you've activated autopilot, in which case the scroll wheels go back to controlling that, so the car is always in charge. These guys in Germany are doing some really, really interesting mods and things with Tesla. And actually, you can put on that screen whatever you want, really. So they had brake horsepower, which is interesting, and speed, and like I say, it's touchscreen, etc. It is odd getting inside a Model 3 and having that experience. And then, of course, there is the, if I just skip forward a little bit, because we've talked about it enough about that, the central screen, right, which is a huge difference when you drive with it, and it's just angled towards you a bit. It's brilliant. Tesla should offer that completely as an option. They never will, obviously. And again, look, the engineering that these guys in Germany have done on that is, I think it's nice. Now, there is another solution on the market that has more of a sleeve behind the screen, a fabric or leather, which covers all that over, from a different company. But I like that. I think it looks nice. The engine, you can see the engineering of it. And I think it's very sympathetic to the car as well. Makes a big difference just having that screen angled towards you a little bit, just more of a driving experience as well. It was a complete assault on the senses, but in a good way. And nice to go and be in a Tesla that didn't look like every single other Model 3 that you see on the road, which is just a white one because it's the free color and everyone's cheap. And we are seeing more and more of them. I know I live in a kind of part of the country where you see a lot of nice cars and stuff down here, but there are so many white Model 3s flying around. It's nice to be in something that is a little bit different. So yeah, these guys are called Custom Tesla. They drove over from Germany, and my buddy Richard is going to kind of be their UK, not so much a reseller, but he's partnering up with them. So if anybody in the UK wants all or any of these, they can go to Richard and he'll facilitate that.
So, what kind of price tag do they put on that?
You know what? And there's a bunch of LEDs they've put in as well, like light changing, very ID, VW ID-ish. I didn't ask the prices of any of these things. I was just too blown away by how cool it all is. No point that I, you know, because I'm not purchasing. I'm like, I forgot to ask. The LEDs they've put in are nice. I would also take out the wood trim, which I think is the worst part of Tesla interiors.
Oh yeah.
It's just horrible. But there's an Alcantara version of that, which is much, much nicer. The LED stuff, that's R&D. You can't get that yet. You can't order that. They're not ready to release it, but all the LEDs around the car are part of their R&D push at the minute. So when it's ready, they'll release it. Yeah, these guys, the guys from Germany are doing some really funky things.
Wow, that's awesome.
Mark, quick question. So I know you said that you adapted quickly to the yoke type steering wheel. Now, if you notice, that steering wheel doesn't have the blinkers and the horn incorporated onto the yoke as buttons. You had the normally functioning blinker and horn. Think that would have been that seemed to be more of a pain in the butt for me? Was using my thumbs to relearn where the horn is and the blinkers and stuff rather than just the yoke, you know? And it just seemed like when you're getting it all at once, okay, you're learning how to feel this new type of non-wheel. And then, you know, you're hitting the blinkers with your thumbs and the horn with your other thumb. It seemed like it was like a bit of an overload, which, of course, we've heard people that have had it for a long time have said, look, we've gotten used to it. It's fine. We like it. It's no problem. My whole rub with it is I just don't think it's an upgrade. I don't think it's better. And I'm all for trying new things, but we should get somewhere and it should be better if we do something new and different.
Because I didn't have to relearn turning or gears. So when you get in, I didn't even think about putting it into drive. Like, it was just, I know how to do that in a Tesla. So I got in and I started moving. The only thing I had to think about was where to put my hands. And I guess if I was needed in an emergency situation to raise someone's attention, I would then sound the horn by just putting my hand out, which is my muscle memory. So this is, I think, is the perfect solution, because this angle that I'm showing on screen right now doesn't really do it justice, but that kind of, that's better. Actually, where your head is and the way that you look down on it, you can also see the stalks as well. So if you are not familiar with that car, or if it's a hire car or something, so this is where the yoke comes in, because you can see what each one does. Actually, you can actually see the whole stalk, and it does give you great visibility onto that screen behind as well. And I've always said I'm reserving judgment on yokes until I've driven with one, because I've never even driven in any car, a sports car, whatever, with a yoke. I'm completely sold. Now, my wife wouldn't have it. So if it was a car we were sharing in our family, it'd have a conventional wheel. But if this was the car that I was driving 9 times out of 10, I'd completely, if it was an option, I'd spec this on a car, because it gives you lots of advantages. You know, you can, like I say, it gives you that wonderful clear field of vision. Yes. And I liked holding it. I liked resting my hands to the side, that more squared off bottom. I enjoyed it.
Cool.
Wow, that's amazing. I didn't think you'd have that reaction at all.
Yeah, no, I thought I was going to be completely cynical, and this is terrible and rubbish. It's wonderful.
I do like that 9 to 3 hand position, but you kind of forces your right into it. It just feels like you're just so in control of everything.
Yeah. Now, I don't know if I was driving it on a track, because if you are driving a vehicle with a steering rack set up for track driving, you don't move your hands from that position. Right. So if it's a track car or a single seater or something, and you're not moving your hands, that would make sense for track. I don't know, Kyle, you do performance driving, whether you need to touch the wheel.
It's more for emergency scenarios. If the car gets loose on you, you want to have maximum, you know, confidence that where you put your hand, there's going to be a wheel.
That's right.
I think this is the dumbest thing on the planet. Sorry.
Right. No, it's good. You know, if it did have like the yoke, I think it should also be paired with a very tight turning radius.
That's really dangerous on the street. So then you have adaptive ratios, but you need a real big adaptive ratio. And that's hard for people to wrap their heads around. I can't see one benefit to not having a round steering wheel other than seeing a gauge cluster, which you don't even need. So look, people can do it they want, but the airbag in this particular wheel is designed to have a full rim. I'm not insinuating there's any safety concerns here. I'm just saying, why? I don't get it.
Right.
Yeah, there is that factor of airbags are designed to go off with a. You have to
redesign. I hadn't even considered that.
If you, again, it's an interesting subtlety of car design. The shape of a steering wheel is actually really precise according to the brand of airbag that you're fitting. And car manufacturers will spend a huge amount of resources finessing the exact shape of the steering wheel to work with the airbag. To make it safe and it deploys. So I didn't have a chance to ask the guys from Germany about that. I'm not sure I'd want to be the crash test dummy on that.
I can guess that no one's done official crash testing with these adapted cut in half steering wheels losing their structural rigidity.
Too few of them. There's too few of them on the roads. So
I'm not against everything they're doing. I think it's great to modify your car. I love modifying cars. I think a lot of the exterior mods, like those self-presenting handles, are great. I've driven with this tilting screen. It personally drives me nuts. I know a lot of people love it. That's fine. No risk there. I just think messing with a circular steering device, which we've had forever, which no one's complained about until Tesla chopped one off themselves. I don't see a benefit, Martin. Like you said, your hand goes to the top. I don't even think it looks good. I don't know.
Yeah, I got back in the car to go home, and immediately I was like, oh, I missed the yoke. Immediately I was just relaxing.
I love the ambient lighting. That looks great. They did the EQS thing in the back of the driver's seat. Like, I'm not against mods. I just think leave the damn circle wheel on that.
And you have a lot of people agreeing with you.
It's the first time anyone's agreed with me on this podcast, so let me revel in it a little bit.
This whole thing has been unnerving.
Dr. Tui even agrees with you. Awesome. Hey, so Kyle, I guess we talked a lot about the Hyundai Ioniq 5 and the Kia EV6 in the past couple of weeks, but you actually did a range test with the Kia EV6 this week as well.
Yeah, Jordan did. So our team, we actually, a lot happened with EV6 this week. A ton. Okay. 1,000-mile road trip, literally going live right after this podcast. So a friend of our channel, Ahmad, picked one up in Green Bay, Wisconsin, drove it 1,000 miles to Dallas. It was his first EV ever experience road tripping, his first time charging a car. It was cold. The video's going on Out of Spec Motoring here very soon. And very eye-opening. I haven't finished proof watching it, but I'm going to finish it at the end of the show and we'll set it live. What we're looking at here is the EV6 range test. This is a wind all-wheel drive. So 77.4 kilowatt hour dual motor car was done in Dallas, Texas in very mild temperatures, 70 degrees, something like that. I think around 68. Big crosswind though. Again, this is Jordan's first time really on his own conducting one of our range tests. So it wasn't like perfectly done, I have to say. There was three people in the car. The climate control wasn't preconditioned when connected to the charger. There's a couple percent plus or minus here. I wouldn't say they were being as precise as me or Tom. So we're going to test one when it comes here in the full precise way. They did everything they could. They DC fast charged the car to 100%. They sat at 70 miles an hour most of the time. The problem was in the video, they filmed a lot when they first got on the highway and they accidentally got to 74 miles an hour. And then they weren't going to make it back to the charger. So they went 64 miles an hour at the end. And I was like, this isn't like totally 100%. And to be honest, none of our range tests are 100% accurate. You know, occasionally, not so much since I moved to Colorado, but we'd get stuck behind a truck and you kind of have to counteract a little bit. And, you know, there's real world testing. We're not throwing these things on a dyno. So yeah, I would say it's a 97% test and accuracy. And yeah, it did worse than the Ioniq 5 in our testing, which I think is a big shock. So it's
not by much.
Well, it's much warmer outside. Okay. They had a crosswind and one extra person in the car. I really like to do this with no more than two people in the car generally. Right. Is it that big of a difference? Again, not huge because it's sprung mass, it's moving around, whatever. But yeah, it did 224 miles, I think, and Ioniq 5 did 227, and the Ioniq 5 was much colder temperatures. And if you watch this 1,000-mile road trip in EV6, especially in the cold, this thing was not even getting 200 miles between chargers. So same thing we've seen with Ioniq 5, EV6, very susceptible to temperature, but also not efficient on the highway. They averaged, I think, 3 or 3.1 miles per kilowatt hour, same as Ioniq 5 in the test.
And I did the Ioniq 5 range test also in much colder temperatures here in New Jersey. Well, it wasn't much. The battery did cold soak overnight, and I didn't even hit 200 miles. I went 195. Right. I only got 2.7, I think, miles per kilowatt hour. But you know, when I left my garage that morning, it was 17 degrees Fahrenheit. So it was dead of winter.
Yeah, and Brandon brought up a good point. The test maybe on the highway, they sat at 70 most of the time. It just wasn't really captured on camera, everything. So it wasn't filmed in the way that you and I do everything, Tom, where we, you know, try and bring the audience on.
It's harder than people realize. It's work. Like, we don't just hop in the cars. Well, Kyle just does everything very casually, but he's just a natural at filming. But it is work. I'm thinking about a lot of things. There's traffic coming up. You know, you try to figure out how I can get around this without slowing down too much. You sometimes need to take alternate routes. You'll look up ahead. There's traffic. You can hop off the highway here, get back around, miss that, and only, you know, drive a mile off the highway and miss a whole lot of traffic. So it's not just, you know, chilling in a car for 4 hours. It's actually can be a little stressful trying to do it good, because so often Kyle will tell you, like, we'll get through halfway the test and then a big problem will happen. And that's it. Your day's ruined. You turn around and drive home.
It's happened so many times to me.
I made a mistake once where I started my range test. And by the time I was almost at the 75%, which is my first check, and I usually check in 75, 50, then 25. And I realized I hadn't reset the trip meter when I DC fast charged. like, you know, 30 miles earlier. And I'm 30 miles into it. And I'm looking at it. It says you went 68 miles or something. I'm like, I didn't go 68 miles. So now it's turn around, go back, plug it in, charge to 100, lose 2 hours of your time. You know, it's
yeah. Actually, so I'm not here to knock. They did their best. What I need to give them really is just a procedural list to go through, right. You know, in series of stuff. And it's hard to capture everything. And, you know, my thing, and Tom, you know, this from working with me, I nerd out about every half a percent of efficiency that we need to make sure they're totally perfect. And I freak out if it's not, because I want it to be totally fine. And it's the real world. It's not going to be like that, but I will say they put in a great effort. They got, I would say, a very realistic number. I think they were within 5 miles of what they would have done, plus or minus. So I don't think it's, you know, the numbers wouldn't be revolutionarily different if they had done anything a little bit differently. And pretty disappointed on the highway range. Now, these cars in the city are proving to be unbelievably efficient. My friend Zach, who we've been using his Ioniq 5, which I think is a much better comparison to this EV6 because they're both on sort of the more efficient wheels. So, you know, they went like 3 or 4 miles difference on the highway. But in the city, insanely efficient. So, you know, it's just really good regen capture and things like that. Thermal management's the biggest problem. We have to harp on Hyundai and Kia. Why launch a car in the middle of winter with no on-route battery preconditioning? This whole road trip, by the way, this 1,000-mile trip, never saw more than, I think, 150 kilowatts, and most of it was 60 to 70 kilowatts on a 1,000-mile road trip. I mean, the thing just does not retain heat. It doesn't warm up. It's a mod's first time. So he's not like flooring it. He's got range anxiety. They're figuring out Electrify America. He didn't realize, you know what I thought was pretty funny in this road trip that they did? You know, when you roll up to an EA station and on the app, you got to select the charger number.
Right.
And you got to look at the top and they have the VIN number and it's the last two. They didn't know this, so they're just looking at plug one or plug two, and they're like, why isn't the app working? And it's activating the right. charger on the other side where they were.
Yeah, that should be a little more intuitive anyway. I mean,
and it's a great glimpse into, you know, we live in our bubble of, you know, living this stuff every day and nitpicking little things, and they're trying right. to figure out, is the car cold? Is the charger providing the power? What is preconditioning? And it's interesting to see a glimpse into, you know, someone who's very technically inclined, their first EV driving experience, which I was pretty shocked. It's a great use case video for anyone designing chargers or a car to see how people are going to approach a problem.
Right. Your friend who owns the car is great because he's like me. I don't enjoy going down to 0%. It's why I don't make 70 mile an hour range test videos, because for me, it's just not a pleasurable experience trusting my own mental math.
The only time I feel alive, Martin.
And it's like, and because you're down, he's down to one, I think it hit 0%, then he went up to 1 mile again, I think, just right at the end of your video. And it's funny because you can hear it in his voice. And then as he's reversing into the charger, you can, it's that sense of, oh. It's like he's not enjoying this process of just running, just getting to the charger and running out. He's coming up to a stop sign in the car park. He's like, I'm not stopping. I want to get to the charger. Go and watch the video. It's brilliant. Highly recommend it.
Yeah, they also didn't use just EA. They used another Oklahoma charging. I can't remember the name of it. It's in the tip of my tongue. Anyway, so it wasn't just like an EA road trip. It was great to see them try different networks and figure things out. So I'm in the middle of watching it, so that's why I'm excited about it. But I think it's a great glimpse.
Martin, that only happened to me once, and I'm really confident driving the cars because I can really, if you drive every EV out there down to zero as much as Kyle and I do, we get to know when the car is telling you I'm really close to the end. You can feel the pedal response. You just know it's coming. And it happened to me with the Polestar. The only time that I was like really freaked out, and because I didn't get the car from Polestar, a friend of mine who got it from Polestar loaned it to me for the day, and he probably shouldn't even have done that because they gave it to him to do some things with.
Wait,
it.
Polestar also loaned me a car and said, don't do any range testing. Yeah, so then I went and did range testing.
So I'm going, it's still at like 7 or 8% state of charge, and I'm blasting along the highway, 70 miles an hour. I think I still had 10 miles before I had to get off my exit to the EA station, and the car started slowing down. The Polestar actually couldn't maintain 70 miles an hour at like 5 or 6% state of charge. It really loses its power. So like I'm slowing down on the highway. There's like no real shoulder to get off on. And now I'm 10 miles from the charging station. So I'm like, I'm not making it. So I got off the next exit, parked, mapped out like all these back streets and drove like 15 miles an hour for like 8 miles. And it took so long. It felt like it took 40 minutes. And I'm white knuckled with the steering wheel because I'm like, I don't want to call my friend and tell him we need a tow truck. He has to have this back to Polestar tonight. And like, that was all added anxiety. So that was the only time that I was really freaking out about it. And, but this time with the Mini came close because when I had planned on, you know, we have to plan our routes because otherwise I'll never end up at the charging station at the right state of charge. So I had a perfect route of like 100 miles planned out. And midway through, I'm looking at it saying, this isn't going to do 100 miles. I'm going to be like 4 or 5 miles short. And then at the 75% check-in, I really started worrying because I had to go like 28 miles and the car was telling me it had 22 miles of range. And like, you know, it's always 2 or 3 miles you could squeeze out, but does this battery have 6 miles in it? You know, and it ended up that the last from, and I should have checked my notes because when I range tested the Mini Cooper SE 2 years ago, it did the same thing. The last 25% gave me the most miles. And that's usually not the case with most of the EVs we test. It's usually the other way around. But in my 4 quarters, it did 26 miles, 24 miles, I think 23 miles, and then 30 miles. So the last 25% actually provided the best range for me. And but I didn't think I was going to make it this time either. It was one of those times where I was a little worried. But, you know, I mean, hey, I wasn't worried like Polestar worried. That time I was really sweating.
Right on. All right. So, Kyle, you had the chance to drive some other cars this week. Do you want to talk about those first, or do you want to talk about the Ford Escape plug-in hybrid? Maybe we should talk about that.
Well, yeah, I think the Ford Escape plug-in hybrid we can gloss over really quick because got a lot of battery electric stuff to talk about. But 2021 Ford Escape plug-in hybrid, 2 years delayed because they had issues with the Kuga in Europe, which is the Escape. And they had some wiring issues, and I guess, I don't know. Anyway, it was delayed. I don't know the particular reason as to why. We finally got the car, about time. Very interesting car to play around with for a week. We did a lot of testing on this vehicle and more videos to come. We've just had some other stuff that have gone up on the channel. We did a range test, city and highway, which I like to do for plug-in hybrids with a pretty big battery pack. It's about 14 kilowatt hours. I'm not sure if that's gross or usable. I asked everyone at Ford. No one could tell me. Literally, I emailed everyone I know, you know, except for like, you know, from my local media contacts. And they're like, we don't know. Let me put you in touch with this person. And I went to that person. And then they're sending me spec lists that don't even mention battery pack. And I'm like, oh, it shouldn't be this hard to tell me how big the battery is. So anyway, we don't know the battery size, but Jordan took it around the city. We have a city loop, which isn't crazy scientific because we have a mix of stop and go and stuff. So this isn't like a standardized test, but we do have some regulations. We keep the cars at a maximum of 40 miles per hour. We try and do half at very low speed stop and go and half at about 40 miles an hour cruising to simulate a mixed scenario. And we try to have the cars kind of run out where we started to counteract wind and elevation, but it's not a true loop style test. Did I think 39 miles on a charge, which is pretty amazing, or 38 point something. And that's really good. Really, really, really good. So that was impressive. We're talking almost RAV4 prime numbers here. The big downside is it's just front wheel drive only. This car is not great in the cold weather. I'll kind of explain why. And then I took it on the highway and did a 70 mile an hour test and got like 28 miles or something like that. 28 miles. Still not bad. And was very impressed. It has amazing acceleration in electric mode. It'll let you go full power in electric mode and doesn't kick the combustion engine on. So this thing, you know, they got the EV driving stuff totally right. The problem comes in the cold, which is the spec for the PTC heater, or the sort of the onboard heater for the vehicle, the resistive heating, isn't strong enough to heat up the cabin in below freezing temperatures. And so what it would do is, even if I lock it in electric mode and I have the heater on, it would kick on the combustion engine. And then once that engine kicks on, it's got to do its cold start cycle. It's got to heat up the cats. It's got to do everything. Yep. And it won't shut off. It's so annoying. It's like, I'm telling you to be in EV mode and give me everything your heater can give me, and I'll freeze a little bit. But no, and what I think is interesting, it's the first time I've ever had a plug-in hybrid, when I precondition it plugged in, kick on the combustion engine. And that's kind of scary if your car is in a closed garage plugged in and your combustion engine kicks on thinking, hey, I'm pulling power from the plug. And it would do this consistently. And that's the first I've ever experienced that
shouldn't happen.
Tuning. I didn't know it was part of the standard where you could have a combustion engine running plugged in. I haven't looked, but I've certainly had Volvo, BMW, other plug-in hybrids, many of them in very cold temperatures, and have never experienced that. They always give me everything the EV system can. And some of them do, you know, kick on the combustion engine in the cold, you know, with this type of tuning. But it's a great car if you just plug it in, you drive it, you don't think about it, and then you charge it at night, because it's only got a 3.3 or 3.6 kilowatt onboard charger. The RAV4 Prime Max Trim gives you a 6.6 and all-wheel drive and a lot more power, although this was not slow at all. And that's a better Colorado car, but good luck finding one.
Right. So sounds like it's a great RAV4 competitor, Prime competitor, but it doesn't have quite the performance as the RAV4 Prime, but it's a lot more affordable.
I think it actually drives better. I like the way it handles. Something about the RAV4 Prime and that chassis in general just doesn't speak to me very much. Again, it's not a performance car, but Ford's chassis tuning, everything is really well done on this car. And so you get all the good Ford driving dynamics. But what's a little bit annoying is the regular hybrid's all-wheel drive. Then you get the plug-in hybrid, and it's just front-wheel drive. But in terms of cost, it's $1,000 cheaper than the hybrid when you factor in the $6,500 federal tax credit. So there's really no downside here, other than if you live in a cold weather place, you know, it can handle it. You may just not be able to force it in electric mode all the time.
Yeah, and plus the all-wheel drive if you live in a cold weather place.
Sure, but like Tom, it's not as bad as like the Pacifica hybrid, which I believe has no heater, electric heater, and has to run the combustion engine no matter what in cold temperatures.
Yeah, I'm not sure of that, but I do remember when I had it, and I did have it in the winter, the combustion engine always went on in the morning. Yep. So yeah, it probably is the case.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, really enjoyed my time with it. The whole team was excited about it more than I thought anyone would be. But it shows me how annoying it would be for me to live with a plug-in hybrid, because let me tell you, I was plugging this thing in everywhere, dinner, lunch, hogging spots.
EVC, like, always be charging.
Yeah. Yep, we're charging this thing. Thankfully, I don't think I blocked any EVs, because I had a thing where if there was an open port, then I would plug the car, and I wasn't ever going to take the last one, even though I still kind of hate myself a little bit for plugging it in on public chargers. but yeah, we kept that thing topped up. I drove it for a week of almost 500 miles, and like 350 of that 500 miles was done electric, and we did like MPG testing with it too. So like, it would have been a lot more if we didn't do combustion testing.
Yeah, and it's a shame that it doesn't have a 6.6 kilowatt onboard charger, because it plug-in hybrids, especially if they have big batteries, they become so much more useful if you can quickly top that off, and you can just run in electric mode so much more than if you're slower charging. I understand why a lot, and I've talked to manufacturers about this, and their answer is that they don't expect their customers to install a proper level two charger if they're just getting a plug-in hybrid. They're probably just going to plug and charge at level one, so the 3.3 kilowatt charger is already overkill. That's their answer, but you know, it's not always the case, and you can get so much more out of your battery if you can charge it quickly.
Yeah, so as far as plug-in hybrids go, one of the good ones, big recommendation, loved the drivetrain tuning, loved 120 kilowatts or more in electric mode is like twice the power of my battery electric smart car. It's not slow. So versus like some plug-in hybrids have like 60 kilowatts at full throttle on a good day. And these are all the big things that go into it. So I liked it. It didn't like the cold.
Right. Speaking of cold, I believe you were up in Michigan doing some with Magna, testing their new electric powertrain, the Magna EV powertrain vehicles. So you got to drive an electric GMC Sierra and a 2015 Tri-Motor Model S, which is okay. I don't know which one you want to start with, but tell us.
Yeah, let's talk Model S. So first, let me a little background on Magna, because some people may not know. Magna is a huge third-party parts supplier that produces, you know, pretty much every EV has a Magna component. For example, they did the battery enclosure for Hummer EV. They've done the front motor for the ID4 as a Magna part. So they have their hand in a whole bunch of EVs across the board. Rivian has a lot of Magna components in it, for example. So they're just a third-party supplier. There's tons of them. Go ahead,
Dominic. They do contract manufacturing as well, right?
Yeah, so Magna Steyr, their sort of Austrian partnership, is in Graz, Austria. I've been to the factory. It's awesome. We're going back again in July. We're doing an out-of-spec Euro trip. We're going to go tour the factory. They're contracted to build the Fisker Ocean, and also they're going to have a high Magna parts component inside of that vehicle. So I think it's going to be the most Magna thing ever. And so I thought that was kind of interesting. They also build the I-Pace. They've built Aston Vantage. They've built G-Wagons. So they build some of the best stuff. They've engineered Mercedes' 4MATIC system, BMW's xDrive system. These guys are not messing around. So some of their core competencies come from sort of drivetrain management and transfer cases. They do all the GM transfer cases, the four-wheel drive autos, for example, that can do torque distribution mechanically. And so now they're getting into electric vehicle powertrain. We've seen the first in a series production, I believe, being the ID4 front motor, although there might be other projects they can't talk about. But what I went there to experience was, you know, the whole point of this trip, why they invited me up there, was to experience this sort of heavy duty or medium duty truck axle application. And the use case of a truck as an electric vehicle is very different than a passenger car, where it's just under heavy load. It's got a tow. Things going to be hard throttle for a long period of time, towing up grades. You know, every truck kind of needs to pass what's called the Davis Dam test, which is a 7% grade at max tow and has to maintain, I think, 45 miles an hour. There's a whole bunch of requirements, and I probably got some of those wrong. And combustion trucks don't mind just sitting at wide open throttle. You get into a diesel truck and it can tow, you know, 1,000 pound-feet of torque. But electric motors have a peak power rating, which typically holds for 10 to 30 seconds, and then it goes down to consistent, which is usually 30 to 40% of its peak rating. This is why we've seen Mustang Mach-E derate. This is when Tesla motors get hot and derate. And so this motor will derate, but it can hold almost 60% of peak under hard load. What's neat about this solution is this is a electric vehicle drivetrain solution called the Intelligent Force, and they have an e-beam axle that is a chunky 240 kilowatt rear motor permanent magnet system. It doesn't necessarily need to be in the rear, but it's your primary drive permanent magnet system, and it will pretty much it's a solid beam, so it's meant for not independent suspension trucks, but like 2500s, 3500s, 4500s, even the medium duty 55 and 6500s, where you can slap this thing in the back. The OEs can choose whatever they choose to do, software tuning, change the character of the motor, change the one pedal feel, but it will save them all the R&D of designing this drivetrain. The way I look at it is, you know, BMW, Porsche, even, you know, Ford and GM have had combustion engines for years that defined the character of the brand. And now, in my opinion, the character of the brand is defined in how the software controls the electric motors, not the electric motor itself. And so you may as well just buy a good off-the-shelf component and slap it in there and go. And this is not an ad for them or anything. I just was really impressed with the robustness, the focus on cooling, the focus on consistent power, and the fact that these things can tow over 24,000 pounds with this system in there. And it's just pretty insane.
That's a lot.
So,
hey, so that's that works out to 321 horsepower on that rear axle.
And that's just the rear. And then they have a secondary motor in this particular, and this was 408 kilowatt peak, the particular truck I drove.
408.
And it was, yeah. So what's that? Like almost 600 horsepower, 500 and something horsepower. It means the same 0 to 60 as a Model Y dual motor. Again, that's not the point. It's not meant to be a performance, but it is hilarious.
That's 547 horsepower.
Yeah, 550 horsepower in a truck. I mean, it's definitely the quickest accelerating big truck I've ever been in. We're not talking 1500s. This is
a heavy duty, right?
Yeah, this is not F-150 Lightning. This is not Silverado EV. This is heavy duty, you know, 2500 and up. And so They put an 83-ish kilowatt hour battery pack in this thing, fully custom done. And they just, you know, the only downside to this whole trip was it took 3 days to drive the thing for 10 minutes because it's like way up in the middle of northern Michigan.
Right.
So it was a big time crunch. And I put the video up this morning, but it's like I filmed as much as I could and barely got anything useful. They were like, we were at a proving ground, so I got to drive the truck in other places, but I could only film it in like a donut snow circle. So here I am drifting a truck trying to provide like this axles feels this way and that way, but I'm just drifting it. So it's not the most useful bit of consumer advice to OEs. I'd sure. like to actually spend some time, put some payload in this thing, put a trailer behind it and really see how it performs under load. But I hope we'll see this in a series production model, maybe in the next 2 to 3 years, something like that. And I think they're using this truck as a showcase to hopefully sell some of those contracts to put it in, which is very typical for their business.
Right. And who needs a truck? I guess a Ram Revolution.
Yeah, I think it'd be a great application for them. Some of the GM stuff, if they decide to have a heavy duty option, things like that.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. GM's got the Ultium thing in it with a huge. I don't know if they need.
Yeah, but that's bigger. Designed for independent suspension on their axles, so they retain their same battery pack, but the motor itself, they may not want to design a different motor for lower volume stuff. They may buy off the shelf.
Yeah,
we'll see who uses it. I'm sure we'll find out, but I have no clue genuinely where the application would be. But I was just really impressed with the integration into this truck. I was more excited about the prototype, like how they built this thing, more than the actual axle itself. Right. But there's a whole video on Out of Spec Reviews that just went up. It's about a half hour long, going in depth on this full system.
Out of Spec Reviews, I'll have to check that out. So they also had a Tesla Model S there, 2015. It's got the old nose cone on it.
This was the craziest thing ever. So like we roll up to
motors.
This. Yeah, we're in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. I'm literally looking at Canada, and this thing's like kind of stuffed in the corner. I'm like, what's going on with this old Tesla? They're like, well, back in 2015, we wanted to showcase our electric motor and drivetrain calibration stuff. So we bought a Model S, which was a great electric platform. We took the battery out of it because this was before anyone figured out how to pack the BMS in the cars. And they put their own prototype battery in it, again, around 85 kilowatt hours. And then put a 600 and something horsepower, three motor all-wheel drive system with full torque vectoring on the rear axle. And this is a awesome thing. They were like, you want to drive that? I'm like, that's really cool. Let me drive that one, please. And so they like handed me the keys. They're like, yep, ESP, traction control off, go drift it around this handling circuit. And that's what we did. And the video went up yesterday. And again, it's a niche video. It's not performing that well, but I really enjoyed, you know, sort of dancing this car around, feeling their drivetrain tuning. And honestly, I can't wait to try a Plaid with track mode, because if it can feel half as good as this car did in sort of low mu or loose surface sliding around, drivetrain control, it would be magical. It really was maximizing the capability of Model S chassis, showcasing how great it really is, way better than what Tesla was doing at the time with an open differential and dual motor.
Right. What's going on with that bumper?
Yeah, so it's a snow bumper. So if you crash into a snowbank, it doesn't destroy anything. Huge cooling up front too, so you can see cuts into it for giant radiators. And man, this thing was just the highlight of my trip. It was great.
Tom, do you have any questions about that?
No, not really. I think I actually saw that vehicle. I think they brought it to the Geneva Motor Show like, I don't know, 5-6 years ago. Somewhere around like 2015 or 2016. I'm pretty sure that they had that there. Cause I know there was I don't know if it was Magna. I know a company had a Model S that looked like that I didn't really spend much time. I just walked by it. I think I saw that vehicle, Kyle, like 5 or 6 years ago in Geneva.
Yeah, it's very possible. And you can see, they just let me shred it. I was just like, okay, thanks. See you in 20 minutes. Yeah,
if you're listening to us on audio, we're watching the video of it going around in circles in the snow. It looks like a frozen lake or something.
Yep, it's not. It's just a groomed snow drifting circuit. It's meant for testing drivetrain tuning and calibration and where torque distribution can go. But we just used it for fun. So big consumer advice here.
That's like the exact thing you did with the truck. Just drive around in circles.
It's all I did with the truck. I just ripped it because they're like, okay, you're in a circle. I'm like, I'm not going to not go sideways. I just spent 3 days on a bus getting up here in planes and like hassle. I'm like, I'm going to drift your thing. Thank you very much.
Is that like a secondary iPad screen with a bunch of sensor details in that bottom corner there?
Yeah, so this is where you can change all your traction control settings. Right. It'll show you what each motor is outputting, the temperatures of everything. The rear motor is controlled by a clutch pack, so it can actually overdrive the outside wheel, again, with not only torque vectoring on individual motor control, but you can actually start to lock the axle together mechanically. And this is, again, seven-year-old technology. These days, you know, there's more awareness on how to tune motors to kind of all spin at the same speed. But you have to keep in mind, you know, this was early days, 2015. This is before the Model S facelift. This was an AP1 car. This is, you know, and everything worked. Air suspension worked. Heated steering wheel worked. It was on old Tesla software, which I loved. Version 7. It was great. It was like going back in time, but like experiencing the Plaid back then or driving this back then must have been just a total mental explosion. It was so cool.
That's awesome. All right, let's see what do we have. So let's talk about some news of the week. We don't have a whole lot of news because like I said, I was on the road all day yesterday. Or
can you talk about what you were doing yesterday?
I cannot until next week. It wasn't for EV driving purpose. It wasn't even about driving, so so I can't really say.
Seems like it was worth a day.
It was a lot of time spent on airplanes waiting for them to get off the ground or out of the, and there was just, yeah.
We were at the Detroit airport, like a couple hours apart from each other.
Right. You got there before the snowstorm. Like,
yep.
I think that we were last flights to get out of there because they canceled pretty much everything.
But then I flew into Denver during a massive snowstorm. So I got hit on the other side.
Right. I got hit on the other side too, in different ways. Twice. Yeah. Anyway. So big news this week. Nissan teases two all-new EVs that it will build in the U.S. So new teasers provide the first glimpse of EVs coming from Nissan and Infiniti in 2025. The automaker is going to invest $500 million in the Canton Vehicle Assembly Plant in Mississippi, and it will build both models there. It will also upgrade the factory to produce battery packs for those upcoming vehicles. And so we got a little teaser of the cars, so showing their shapes, and they both appear to be sedans with a fastback back end. The Nissan has a full width light strip at the tip of the nose and three smaller bands on each side. It's, I don't know, we kind of get some Maxima vibes. I don't know, we don't have this on the screen yet, but
sorry,
I don't know. Did you get a chance to see this at all, Tom?
I actually didn't.
Okay, right.
Yeah. I looked really briefly at it. I didn't get to see the side view. It's not a whole lot to go off of there. You know, great. You know, they're going to be, you know, bringing some more EVs. But quite honestly, I can't pull anything out of that, Dom. I'm sorry. I wish I could.
No, that's right. It's hard to see. So right now we're looking at some shots of the front ends of the two vehicles. And yeah, the Infiniti, it looks kind of Infiniti with those like little choppy horizontal lines.
They're Ionic 5 lights now.
Right. Oh, yeah. Ionic 5 does that too, right?
A little bit. Yep.
But I don't know. Hey, Martin, if you have that little, the link to the Nissan media site, they have a standalone video, but it's just like the teaser video itself. I don't know. Nissan was really weird about how they released this information. So,
are you saying Nissan was weird about electric cars?
Yeah. I mean, I've never heard of this before. Is kind of weird. So 2025. Great. Like their next sedans. So we have the Aria coming up very soon.
Wait, can we talk about this really quick? You know, we all probably saw the Super Bowl. Did you see the ad for the Aria in the Super Bowl?
It was more of an ad for Z.
It was, look at how slow and terrible our electric cars are, and look at this cool new Z. I love the new Z. I'm excited more than anyone about this thing. But man, did they trash the Aria in that commercial.
No, exactly. It was like, look at how much fun Nissan can be. And, you know, if you really don't like fun, you can get one of these. That's what I took out of it, you know?
Yeah, really a disaster of messaging, in my opinion.
And the Z is like a low volume, and it's not even like a
halo. It won't be low volume. They'll sell as many as they can make.
Right, which won't be nearly as many as like Camaros or
what's No, I think it'll be right up there. I think it'll be a pretty big volume car.
Oh, really?
Look at 370s. They're on every corner.
I mean, it's a bit of a value play, I guess, in that market niche.
Well, it's the only manual transmission Japanese sports car that has turbos. You look at Supra, it's really a BMW, and it's automatic only. So Nissan said, let's make a Supra, but better, and they're kind of doing it, to be honest.
Right. What about Miata? Doesn't come with a manual anymore?
Yeah, but Miata's makes 180 horsepower. We're talking 400 horsepower, legit, you know, drifting capable, serious car here. Totally different class.
And I was still disappointed. I expected, like, they're going to spend Super Bowl money. They should. I think they're going to make a lot more money on the Aria. I mean, and make it.
I actually think they'll. That's not true. To be.
Oh really?
But we'll see. Well, let's put $5 on it in 3 years.
Okay, or a couple.
Maybe we'll see an Aria then.
we don't have Aria's media chips lined up yet. I don't know if we can even talk about it if we did.
Yeah, I think we can say we do have one lined up, but
that's
probably pretty much all we can
talk about. So we'll be hearing about Aria pretty soon then.
Not that soon, but
not that soon. Okay,
and yeah. Not real world testing
this either. This year, yeah. Though.
Late March.
Oh, right. Oh, that's true.
Yeah,
it's all coming back to me.
Okay. Yeah. It's not. Hey, here's the car. Go and play with it for a week. It's going to be a little less than
it's
that.
It's another one of those things. Travel for 3 days to drive the car for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay, but so
we'll have time for that. We'll have time.
So speaking of Super Bowl, did anyone have any standout? We had a little poll. I think I ran a little informal poll, and other people did on like Super Bowl cards, because there was like, of all the Super Bowl ads are a huge deal. I mean, a lot of people tune in just for that, and they had what, like maybe eight car commercials, and like six of them were for EVs. So I don't know if anyone had. So we had the
killing it. That's the whole thing we need to get to. That was the best ad ever.
Silverado EV, man. Silverado EV.
Kia with the dog and the rescue. That was great.
Yeah, I kind of like the Kia one.
And then the car charged the dog. They didn't really explain how that works, by the way. But like, that was so cool.
Yeah. No, it was.
That was the best one. And I thought the Jason Bateman one was good because it wasn't an advert so much for the Arnic 5. It was an advert for EVs. In that, look, you think that an EV is this small city car. It's not. It's evolved, because if you didn't watch it, it's the story of evolution, where Jason Bateman is, you know, as a caveman, being like, "Hey, we couldn't speak, and we didn't have cars, and you couldn't swipe on your television in the 1950s, and EVs are not what you think they are now. They've evolved." And it was more of an advert for the technology than the actual car. He drove the car, but I liked it for that. I was like, "Wow, thank you, Hyundai."
Yeah, it's surprising we didn't see more of the Ioniq 5 in that commercial. Because, like, I mean, that's the Ioniq 5 has such a presence, right?
Yeah, it's more of an advert for the industry or the. But what I thought was it made me smile was the one for BMW with the iX and Arnie and Salma Hayek as Zeus and Hera. I thought it was good. I mean, you noticed it,
right?
It didn't sell the car.
There's great points about it, but yeah, it didn't really sell the car. I mean, it's great to hang out with Arnold and Salma, so
that
I guess.
Was cool. But yeah. I didn't know the story of Zeus and Hera, so I thought, well, I better do my research into this. Right. And after about 5 minutes on Google, I'm like, how did an ad agency persuade a German car maker who's very risk averse to use these two characters? As I found out, the character of Zeus basically was the only of this Greek mythology. All of his brothers and sisters were eaten by his dad, but he escaped, was raised by a goat, came back as an adult, cut his brothers and sisters out of his dad, killed his dad, freed his uncles, who his dad had imprisoned. One of them gave him the power of lightning, by the way. Slept with his sister, who is Hera, who he married. Their honeymoon lasted 300 years. Not a bad honeymoon, if you can get it. But also slept with his great-granddaughter by pretending to be her husband. This is the freakiest bit of Greek mythology you have ever seen a traditional German car maker embrace. And there's some ad agency going, don't tell them about what Greek mythology is about. So after 5 minutes of reading, I'm like, this is crazy. I never learned it at school. I'm not going to learn it now. This is
the
bonkers.
Germans are currently having a heart attack listening to this.
And it's like, wow, thank you, BMW. This is the weirdest person to hang your brand on.
But even more important than the cars, we've seen Super Bowl car ads before. I also thought the Polestar one was quite interesting, where they said
good.
No everything, but like it's very Polestar-esque. I thought that it's the first time we've seen an EV accessory make it to the Super Bowl with Wallbox, a charger or an EVSE, right. Which, that's sort of cementing, hey, EVs are in people's minds. This is pitching the EV customer. Now, their ad itself I thought was really dumb because their dude was afraid of electricity. But if you're buying a charger, you kind of already have an electric car, so you got over your fear. That was dumb. But pretty interesting to see a charger there.
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah, I was surprised to see like an EVSE, what do you call it, electric vehicle service equipment, the box that you put on your wall in your garage that has the cord you plug into your car. Yeah. To see that, like that, a commercial for that, for like big bucks. I think in the, I think it was one of the ad publications that we're talking about, I think Polestar actually had the most successful ad in that they had the most amount of web searches afterwards. So people were looking up, you know, what is a Polestar? Because, I mean, the average American probably has never heard of Polestar yet until Super Bowl.
I thought what was interesting was if you, Doug DeMiro, who's a popular American car reviewer, posted some statistics from his YouTube channel of his Kia EV6 video after the Super Bowl commercial went up, and it was like 5x. Right. Wow. After the thing aired. And this is on his review that aired many, many days earlier. Right. I thought it was really interesting.
So similarly, I've reviewed the Wallbox 40 amp and 48 amp. Both of those videos spiked during the Super Bowl.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
And I just stumbled onto it because somebody was asking me about the Wallbox, and I pulled up my video and I was looking at the analytics, and I saw like this big spike, and those are old videos, so you don't get spikes, you know, they just kind of flatline. So then I'm like, look, I'm saying, why was this? So I look at my other one spike at the same time, and I'm like, that was Super Bowl Sunday. And right during Super Bowl, I got a big spike. So Super Bowl commercials work. You've got, you know, 100 million people watching that from across all different demographics. A lot of people say, why do they spend so much money to do that? And then they don't even tell you about the car, you know, like we talked about. You don't really learn about the vehicles. It's brand awareness, and they work. People wouldn't be doing them if it didn't work.
But you know what works equally as well is running ad placements on Out of Spec Studios YouTube channels.
That's what I heard, you know.
Also it is the rumor. Very well.
Yeah.
So after the Super Bowl, so is Tesla missing out on something?
Wait. Tom, did you get 62,000 views on reviewing a ChargePoint HomePlex EV charger?
Oh yeah, and that's not even the most. That's not even the most views I've gotten on a charger. I think the Tesla wall connector has the most. I have over 100,000 views on my Tesla wall connector.
Oh my goodness, you are buying dinner next time. Thank you.
Right, you should all fly us somewhere to buy us dinner.
Yeah, on the $150 in ad revenue I made on the, you know.
Wow,
right on. All right. So I was going to say, is Tesla missing a beat here still now? I mean, are they pretty well cemented in the people, consumers' minds? They don't need to take out a $6 million or $7 million ad on Super Bowl.
Every time you research a car, it's going to be Polestar 2 versus Tesla Model Y, or Mustang Mach-E versus Tesla Model Y, or Volkswagen 94 versus Tesla Model Y. So, they don't need that. They're selling everything they can make. And now Giga Austin and Giga Germany are producing Model Ys, which I thought is so cool.
That's very cool. I think the bigger, at some point as a company, and they'll evolve like Apple evolved when it was no longer Steve Jobs, and it was a similar thing under, you know, Tim Cook, but subtly different. Tesla will evolve one day when you haven't got that super force that is Elon Musk's following at the top of the company. And so, you know, the events of this week where he had to delete a tweet where he compared Justin Trudeau to Hitler, like Hitler memes are not funny, right? I get Elon's all about Twitter and being one of the bros, but like that's why he deleted it, because at some point, you know, like the Holocaust association or whatever started tweeting, being like, please stop joking about 6 million people dying. Like, this is not, like, this isn't funny. And he deleted it. And at some point, Tesla will have a brand issue if he continues down that route. At the minute, they're Teflon. Nothing is sticking. At the minute, nothing is sticking, and they're just a super force, and he's a super force. And
I have the feeling some
he
board
can do
members.
What he wants, and they'll still sell cars. But there will become a time. And look, Steve Jobs went through that as well. Like, I use the Apple example, where they had awful problems with one of their phones with the antenna, and he's like, "Look, you're all holding it wrong. You're holding the phone wrong." And he like. The company continued, right? It's a ridiculous thing to say, but when you have these like mega personalities in any company, they'll take you through the good times and bad. But at some point, And Apple are different because they did advertise all the way through that era and have always been big advertisers. But at some point, Tesla will need to find a voice in above-the-line advertising. For now, I think they're a long way away from finding that voice. They don't need to.
Right. I was like, I was at the airport yesterday, as I was saying, and I was sitting by this kid who's probably like 7 years old, and he saw something that was, with a T on it. And I was sitting there, you know, on my phone, and this boy all of a sudden said, "Is that Tesla something? Tesla logo something?" It's like, oh, he's very excited, and he knows Tesla. And
he knows I sat behind like a 18-year-old on the plane the other day, and I feel like an old man now saying that. But I sat behind a teenager who was like Mr. Crypto, and his background was Elon Musk smoking a joint on his phone. And I'm like, this is all he would not stop talking about is Dogecoin and this and that. And I'm like, can we just talk about cars? It's the only thing I know about. I don't know anything about investing.
Yeah.
I love how Kyle's talking about the younger generation. He's 25 years old.
These kids. Yeah. I love it.
Me? 25.
Okay, happens to all of us. Yeah. Happens to all of us.
Yeah.
All right. So let's hit another little piece of news real quick, I guess. So GM will resume Bolt EV and EUV production in early April. It's been a while. They've been had the big battery problems and halted the production of the Bolt EV and EUV at the Orion assembly plant since like last August. And yeah, sales of new cars has stopped. So production was temporarily restarted in November 1st, but then it was stopped again 2 weeks later, and it hasn't been restarted since. But now, according to the Detroit Free Press, the shutdown will now be extended until April 4th, so another almost 2 months. And I'm not sure if it's going to be going on sale in these, you know, if they have like some inventory they're going to sell before that. I don't know. Have any of you looked into the story yet?
No.
The thing, I think the article, that original article by the Free Press, the last sentence of that article said that the Bolt will continue production alongside the trucks.
Yes, we talked about that.
But when they announced the investment, the $7 billion into that facility, they talked solely about the trucks that will be made in that facility. In that whole, it was either a earnings call or that press release. There was no point at which they said, we will make trucks alongside the Bolt.
Did they? Well, during the renovations, at least. I don't know if once everything gets up to speed on the trucks, if they're going to keep on making the Bolt. We don't know.
But all they talked about was we're spending $7 billion. All this money, we're going to make these two trucks in the Orion plant. $7 billion trucks, Orion plant, and I'm like, just say the word Bolt. Like Bolt will continue, and they ignored it. It doesn't mean it's the end of the Bolt because it's a fabulous car, but it does use technology that dates back to. Well, you guys know more than me.
The Stone Ages.
Yeah, what is it called? The BEV, like BEV 2 platform or something. I don't know. That's not a car I'm familiar with. But like, it's not the Ultium technology. I wouldn't be surprised if it goes in 18 months, and it'd be such a shame. But the article that you referenced, Dom, it's the last paragraph was, the Bolt will continue alongside the trucks from 2023. So I'm like, okay, that's good. I hadn't heard that news. That's good. The Bolt's a great car.
Yeah, right. Bolt's really fun. I like the Bolt.
It will all spend $500 million.
Jim Parr is asking, are the new battery pack Bolts, are they getting the Ultium battery pack? And I know you said it kind of quickly, Martin. No, they're not. The Ultium is not designed to go in the Bolt yet, at least. I mean, maybe next generation Bolt.
But it'll be the Equinox.
Yeah. It's not as easy as just, you know, using different battery technology in an existing platform, an existing battery box and everything. It would probably require a complete redesign, which may happen next generation, but not now.
Right. If they decide to make it like a cheaper, something below the Equinox, which is already, you know, a pretty, I think it's $30,000 they're aiming for the Equinox.
Yeah. Yeah. We had a couple comments about the Equinox over the years of the show. And I actually think the Equinox is coming out before the Silverado, right?
Yeah. It's got a really quick date on it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
but they just keep touting the Silverado because trucks are cool. I get it, but like,
no, Equinox is really cool, but I mean, it's a high volume car, and that's what we need. High volume.
We've yet to have like an ID4 competitor really in this segment that is like a little bit less. And I think the starting price is really attractive on this vehicle.
Yeah. It'd be interesting though, if they do like different battery packs and, you know, they, the under 30,000 one that they've been promising now has like the, you know, the 50 kilowatt hour battery pack that goes 180 miles. You know, I hope that's not the case. If they can bring a legitimate 250 mile, you know, crossover that size to market at under $30,000, it's going to be a smash hit. I mean, I've mentioned this before. We had an Equinox for 6 or 7 years. It was a great vehicle. I loved it. And back then, that was when the Volt first came out. And I just kept saying, why did GM make the Volt? They should have taken that tech and put it in an Equinox and had an ERV Equinox, you know, that had 30, 35, 40 miles of range. It would have killed it. And I don't dislike the Volt. I think the Volt's a great car. I think they put that technology in the wrong vehicle. It should have been in a crossover.
Yeah, but that's very GM. They do everything 10 years late. Escalade V, for example, big cash grab. They should have done this 10 years ago. Silverado ZR2. Raptor's been so popular. Why are we just now getting a spicy version of this truck? They're just, you know, they are behind the curve 10 years. So, Tom, they probably heard your advice back then, and they're just getting around to it. I'm so sorry to interrupt you, Dominic.
No, please.
Wanting to talk about it. But one thing I think is really important that we bring up is there was a cargo ship in the middle of the ocean that caught fire carrying Porsche, Volkswagen, Audi, Bentley, a whole bunch of Volkswagen Group cars.
Felicity Ace? Let me Google that. There we go.
I think 4,000 vehicles were on this.
Right. I thought when this story broke, I thought it was just Porsches. But as the story's developed, it does appear to be just a bunch of German cars.
Yeah, ID4s, everything kind of on there. And yeah, just a total disaster. Thankfully, the crew is all okay. They were all evacuated. So this ship was just by itself floating around in the sea. And my understanding is now they've I think extinguished it, and it's now being pulled into port is kind of what I heard. But
I haven't heard the latest. But
yeah, but man, this is just going to be, I think, a hammer to our, you know, new car shortage plus this. There's a lot of cars, and especially with ID4s in such short supply and people really wanting them, at the end of the day, it's not helping anything.
Right. Even if they're burnt, they're going to have like smoke damage probably, right? And that's going
to maybe I don't think we can speculate on damage. No one knows how the cars will be. I mean, these ships are huge and there's so many layers. And if it's on the back of the ship, then the front's like a half a mile away, if not longer. So hard to say. But I know a lot of people, friends of mine, who have cars that they've ordered that are on this ship. And they're like getting calls from their dealer and they're like, we don't know what's going on. And actually a famous case is Matt Farah, who's an American car journalist here. He has a Porsche Boxster Spyder on this ship actually, and he's been tweeting out some updates that he's been getting from his dealer, but that doesn't look good either way.
No.
Someone said maybe the ID4 over the air updates were on the ship and burn, but we're going to be doing hopefully some coverage of the ID4 updates soon. I've been bugging Volkswagen to say we need to try this thing out so we can share it with everyone so we at least know what's coming. So you know, they at least want to talk about it a little bit more, hopefully, and we'll be able to share some info at some point as soon as I'm pushing for it as fast as possible.
Right. So I was trying to think if there was any other big news this week. There's some news that Ital Design is working with Back to the Future car DeLorean about a new DMC, like the Back to the Future, and everyone knows that car with the gold wing doors. But you know, we've heard electric DeLoreans about, you know, it pops up every like 2 or 3 years.
There are plenty of electric DeLoreans on the road today.
Oh yeah, people convert them, and
but DMC even had an electric conversion package. Whoever owned the rights to that I think it was in Texas,
it was popping up. But I've never seen a whole lot of follow up. I mean, I hear lots of like news about it coming, and it's about to happen.
They even worked with cars that have been done, and they've been reviewed and driven and filmed with.
Okay.
Yeah, those are conversions. This is talking about a whole new vehicle.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. And I reached out to them already and just kind of got, hey, Tom, thanks for reaching out to us, but visit our media site for information.
I love that.
Yeah. So this car that the Ital Design was showing, this little teaser video, and actually it's looked a little bit different. It's got like a Tesla style notch in the front of the nose. It looks almost, you know, it doesn't have the Tesla logo.
All the Tesla people out, but it's, who cares? It'll look cool.
Yeah, it very well could, you know. Yeah, anyway,
we'll see if they make it to production. Like, it's so hard to get a car, you know, ready to production. We've seen Lucid and Rivian do it in recent times, but it's very difficult to get a ground up EV sort of without having a large backing behind you to get this thing going. And let's just hope it's not a cash grab by these people.
Martin put up a nice screenshot there on the front. Actually, I was looking at it. It's almost more Citroen looking, the V and the notch in the nose.
Mm. It's hard, isn't it? Because if you're going to make 150 of a vehicle, you can do it with a Rimac Nevera. You can do it with a Pininfarina Battista. You can do it with the Lotus Evija because they're $2-2.5 million a vehicle. And there's a market for those buyers out there who swim in a different world to where we ever will. And they'll buy them and never drive them and sell them for a profit. So, and there'll be some who do drive them and love those cars. But if you're going to try and do a vehicle that isn't like that, and you're not a really big company, as you know, with those resources, I'm kind of doubtful. I don't think we'll ever see it.
There's still a few, there's a bunch of startups trying to bring cars to the market from scratch. Like Aptera, I guess, is one of those. They've been on their second.
We did a drag race and it smoked the Model 3.
Do you see that? I mean, that's, that was great.
That was cool.
Yeah. I mean,
still waiting to drive one of those.
That's a really unique approach, and I think they might be able to get traction because it is so different from everything else.
No.
You don't think?
No.
Yeah. I mean, even if it's exactly like a, or say like the Fisker is another, you know, pop-up one, and they've got a lot of help. They've got a name. People know the name somewhat.
But they don't have a good track record.
Right. Well, I mean, but they've got the InDesign to do, and now they've got a good manufacturing partner. They've got Magna to build the thing,
but this is going to be a miracle. And I think everyone's cautiously optimistic, but very cautious.
Right. Definitely. And there was another, Atlas. There's a company called Atlas working on a electric pickup truck, ATLIS, Atlas. I don't know if you're familiar with it. They're doing a lot of, pardon me?
I think it's Atlas, right?
Okay. That would, Atlas, that makes sense. Yeah. I look at it as Atlas. Atlas.
I could be wrong, but I thought that's how they pronounced it, Atlas.
Okay. Yeah. They've been working for a couple of, 2-3 years on bringing the truck up and doing it like from the ground up, and a lot of engineering and taking a lot of input from outside and just sharing a lot of the process with their people who are helping fund the project. I mean, there's 100 different ways to go about starting up a new car company, and you know, 99% of them aren't going to work. but
we talked about every single one of them on this podcast. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
they all get coverage.
Look at Bollinger. You know, Bollinger started out. They were like had the first truck that was built that showed up at shows. That look, we're gonna have this pickup truck. Like, what's?
And now they're just doing chassis, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
I have some sympathy for Bollinger because isn't that the guy who made a ton of money, and it's just a passion project, and like it's all personal fortune that he's put into it. So the motives behind it are good. A bit like
really
Dyson
cool too.
Like Dyson was all private money. There was no kind of crowdfunding or doing it to do a SPAC or raise money or like a get rich quick scheme. And Dyson in the end went, we just can't make an EV that we want to make at a price point we could sell that you wouldn't laugh at. So we spent $100 million and we're going to stick it in a drawer and lock it.
Should have just walked in the casino, put it all on black, and walked out.
James Dyson's got a few quid. He's all right.
Yeah.
He's all right.
All right. So it is, that brings us to the end of our show, I believe. If you have any questions or comments, you can leave them on the Inside EVs forum podcast thread or on our YouTube or Twitch comment sections. If you like the show, please give us a thumbs up if you're watching us on YouTube. And don't forget, you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. Follow Tom Logney at Tomolog. That's with two M's. Martin Lee is at EV News Daily. Kyle Connor is at It's Kyle Connor. And I'm at Dominic_Y. Click subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications because we may have a pop-up show coming this Monday, I think 10 o'clock a.m. Eastern Time. So we'll see you all again next week. Ciao.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Check out our huge in-stock selection of TruBolt door locks. We have a variety of styles and finishes to suit your needs. TruBolt door locks provide homeowners and builders with quality door locks at an affordable price. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Now's the time for a great deal on a new Honda. It's time to take an adventure with rugged capability and commanding style. Check out the Honda Ridgeline, Pilot, Passport, or CRV. For a limited time, well-qualified buyers can get a 1.99% APR on a 2025 Ridgeline or a 3.99% APR on a 2025 Pilot, 2026 Passport, or 2025 CRV.
See dealer for financing details.